wow, you guys sound like you want to hear how to transfer from one quadrant to the next, and everybody hooted and hollered about that. So I thought that'd be a great thing to train on this week. So if that's A-okay with you guys, let's punt and go forward and hear about how do we shift quadrants. Because
Mary Jo?
Yep.
I'm sorry. Last week you had mentioned a website, I think, for, what was it, regarding, it's not compliance, but another website that Manatech had just instituted.
You're talking about safety monitoring at manatech.com?
Is
that the one? It's not a website. It's actually an email address.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Great. Okay.
What is safety monitoring at .com? So that's the email address that you would email anything you have to do with product issues. Like if you go, wow, titanium dioxide, what the heck is that? Pronounce his name. I just went to see him last week. Robert Kiyosaki. And just the best way to remember how to pronounce his name is that the ending I and the first I have the same pronunciation. They're both E's, so it's Kiyosaki. Okay, Robert Kiyosaki. Of course, we know, you know, for those of us at Manifest, we had the joy of being able to hear him, and he gave a great talk, and I'm still absorbing a lot of that. And we reviewed it last week on the review of Manifest, and he has written many books. He's very prolific in writing, and he's now written a number of books, and I think coming out with another one with his buddy Donald Trump. They just have incredible amount of wisdom in them, and I'd like to share some of that with you today around the cash flow quadrants. And first of all, what's important to understand is that cash flow quadrants exist, understand what they are, and then understand where you are in relationship to them and how you can move out of where you are if you choose to do that. What are some steps you can take to make better decisions for yourself or get to other places in your life if you're not really ecstatic about where you are. The first step is, of course, understanding what those quadrants are, cash flow quadrants. And if you draw most of you have gone through this, but I'll go through it quickly just for those of you who haven't. If you just take and draw like a big T on a piece of paper, you know, where you're separating out and getting four different quadrants, in your upper left quadrant, you're going to put the letter E, and that stands for employee. And that quadrant is where, you know, most of America is, okay, and they're employed, and we'll go through each one. The bottom one is S for self-employed, the bottom one right underneath E, and that we call the left side of the quadrants. On the right side of the quadrants, so the top box is the B quadrant, which is for business owner, and the one underneath it is the I quadrant for investor. And we know that probably 95% of America is on the left-hand side, and the other 5% are on the right-hand side. The problem, though, is that 95% of the money is made on the right-hand side and only about 5% on the left-hand side. So you've got this incredible split, people versus money. And that's why he calls them cash flow quadrants. Where's the cash flow coming from in this country? Where are the wealthy people and where are those who have not? And he defines that, and that through cash flow quadrant analysis, which I think is fairly brilliant because it really gives us a better picture of where we are and why we're stuck where we are and why cash doesn't work for us. Why is it that for so many people, cash doesn't work? And that's what this quadrant analysis tells you and suggests to you, you know, why it's not working. So if we look at each of these quadrants, you want to evaluate what are the quadrants and what are the core values underlying the quadrants. And so let's jump in through that. The first one is employee, the E quadrant. Again, that's where the majority of people are. And I don't know. I guess as a lawyer, I never was. I was in that quadrant only for a part-time in my life. I got in and out of it when I worked for corporations, but probably that's the quadrant I spent the least amount of my life in is the employee quadrant. In fact, probably less than 10%, maybe 2% of my life I've been in the employee quadrant. But the employee quadrant is this. You're employed, you work for somebody else. Now, that inherently has its own problems because somebody else is determining your value, your net worth. You're really working to make somebody else's dreams come true instead of yours. But what are the advantages of that employer? It's salaried, okay, and you need to know that salaried people are taxed at the highest rate out of any of the quadrants. They pay the highest taxes. In fact, I believe Kiyosaki's statement is that you're playing a game of 50-50. You're splitting 50% of your net of your earnings go to the government, between local taxes, federal taxes, state taxes, and all the other machinations that are paid through it. That's what you're ending up with. So he's saying you're becoming a partner with government if you want to be an employee. And the core value around that quadrant is that you have some sense of job security. This is the fear that people are living with in that quadrant. In other words, they fear risk, they fear change, they like security, things to be like consistent, certain, reoccurring. Uncertainty creates massive fear in people's lives in this quadrant typically. That's why they stay in it. It's a comfort zone. They have the knowledge they're getting a paycheck every week or every other week, and they live based on that paycheck. But that also means that the paycheck controls their life. They have a need to get that paycheck, and that's what keeps them going. So, and they have a value in their life that whatever someone else does for me is good enough. So if you want to take that value and do the opposite value, I would suggest that they say to themselves, I'm not worthy of more. I'm not good enough to be wealthy. I'm not good enough to achieve my dreams. You know, so the value of what other people do for me is good enough tells you that you're not enough to achieve something better. They exchange time for money. So their whole concept of life is that I'm only worth as much time I put in. So how do I get more money? I work more hours. And so many people, even going to this conference this week, the Quickening with the Clemmer work, you know, how many people they talked about, well, I want to increase my income by $2,000 over the next 2 months. And well, how are you going to do that? That's my question. And they said, well, I'm going to just put in more hours. And I went, wow. It's scary to me because the minute somebody says I'm going to earn more money because I'm going to say, and how are you going to do it? I'm going to put in more hours. I look at them and I go, that's just going to throw you more out of balance in your life, is it not? And they go, well, yeah. I said, who's going to pay the price? Your family, your kids, your development process, your spiritual side, your it costs, and costs. People say, I'll go get a second job. That's the same thing as saying I will put in more time. And when you start saying that that's all you're going to do, while you're doing, you're valuing yourself. It's, again, what's the value in your life? You look at your time and you say, my time is my asset, and I'm going to make money off my time. You don't look at you're not looking at your other assets like creativity and brain power and ability to leverage and all the other things that you have the capacity to do. You're isolated in that one arena of time is dollars, so I'm going to spend time earning dollars and exchange my time for dollars, and that's what's going to work for my life. And I get, but the value I get is what? I get some sense of security. And there's no, I mean, we can talk about Enron and Bear Stearns, and I have friends that were victimized by both of those arenas. And of course, there is today a lot of people talk about there's really no security in the job market, and we have changed dramatically from the 1920s and 30s and 40s. Where the employer-employee relationship was a family relationship. In most corporations today, that's not true. They don't have that, you know, we're starting to shift, and in some companies they have, you know, these great, you know, leadership principles that are leading them, servant leadership principles that are guiding them, but that's a far cry, a very minimal amount of the total corporations out there. A lot of them are still being led by industrial age concepts. Where employees aren't viewed as assets. So there's a lot of, if you can feel a sense of security, you're feeling it, but is it truly there? But again, it's the security-driven people, the people who don't like change, and I know this quadrant so well because I'm married to this quadrant. My husband is this quadrant. he would never one of his jobs, to give you an example of this, my husband lost his job, his company, and he didn't lose it because of him. The company went out of business about 10 years ago. It was our third or fourth year of marriage, maybe it was 12 years ago. My husband lost his job because his company, you know, went out of business. Now, at that time, my husband was in his late 40s, almost 50 years old. And what other job do you think he had? If he's in this quadrant, not specifically title, but same company he had worked for since he was 21 years old. And now he's 50. Now, that's atypical for America today. We usually change. I think that this statement now is like almost 10 times in a lifetime people change their job 10 times. That's like the average in America. And I'm not, don't quote me on that, because I know it was seven about 5-6 years ago. It was seven times, but I heard somebody say it hit the double digits now. Anyway, but my husband he's a classic E. He hates, his value system is he doesn't like change. He's adverse to change. He finds a sense of security in a known zone. He values that intensely, so he stays there. And when he lost his job, and I said, well, honey, why don't we, you know, we have plenty of cash. Why don't you just go back to school and get, oh, my gosh, wouldn't do that. He spent almost a year in depression trying to work through, trying to find other employment. But where do you think he looked for other employment? In the same kind of company. He worked for an elevator company. Now, how many elevator companies are there on the face of the earth? Not a lot. But he couldn't see himself in anything else. So guess what? A year later, he found another elevator company. He has to drive an hour and a half from our house every day to and from work. But you know what? That's where he found a job. And some of you can look at that picture, like I might say, and go, oh, my gosh, that's crazy. I can't, you know, I can't understand it. That doesn't make a lot of sense. But let's stay out of judgment around it. It's who he is. It's where his core value system is. He doesn't know anything different, and he wasn't willing to change, so he follows that pattern. But there's not about judgment around it. It's just that exists in our society. Many people are stuck in that sense. Many people are stuck as an employee for other reasons, and we'll get into that. But you know, that's a guy who values job security, values the concept of I like things to be constant. I don't like change. And so those are the kind of underlying core values. It's good to be loyal to employer. You know, all these issues about if I work hard at a job and they will provide for my financial security, and when I retire I'll have a pension. And, you know, that's all that game that a lot of us were raised to do. But that's what the employee status is. So you can be there, and you might have some kind of lifestyle, but are you ever going to be rich being an employee? The only way you're going to get wealthy being an employee is you either start working in the other quadrants, or you get high enough in a company that you make enough money. But even at that realm, I'll suggest to you that you probably still won't be wealthy, because people tend to rise up in companies, and what happens is they rise up in their expending, because they get advised that buy a bigger house, buy a bigger this, do a bigger this, get a second home, go on fancier vacations. We are caught up in that instant gratification society of spend now, don't worry about it. Okay, do I cover employee? Everybody gets a sense of employee. Okay, the second quadrant is we call it self-employment quadrant, okay? And we're examining core values in these quadrants. Self-employed quadrant, which is where I spent the largest share of my years, is a quadrant where people move out of employees. They don't want to be an employee because they don't want other people determining their value. They want to be able to be what? They want to be able to earn as much as they can. Their concept is, I can create greater things than what they view me as. I want my attributes to be able to pull in as much income as possible, and the best way for me to do that is that it's up to me. If it's going to be, it's up to me. You heard that statement. That's a self-employed quadrant. Typically very smart people, hardworking, hardcore. These people have no fear of hard work. They also... But they do carry a fear of those who might be smarter than they are. they have a fear of a concept of being stepped on by somebody who might be smarter than they are. They have the attitude, again, I think I'm the only one who can do it. They have a hard time delegating because they're so conscious of their own gifts and their own abilities that they tend to want to keep it that way, keep in control. And they tend to also have a lack of trust in others because they look at themselves as being so strongly, competent versus people around them. Their song is, as this comes out of Kiyosaki's work, he calls it "Nobody Does It Better," and you can see that kind of attitude. There's a tad of arrogance, perhaps, in this quadrant. I'm not proud of that I spent 20 years in that quadrant, but that's typical for that quadrant. Money, they don't like their pay to be dictated by others. That's what I said earlier. They like to feel like they're in control. So their fears are not, they don't respond to their fear like the E quadrant responds to fear by seeking security. This quadrant responds to fear of having enough income, fear of financial security, anything like that. They respond by taking control. So they're more after controlling it themselves and that kind of stuff. So who's in this quadrant? Lawyers, doctors, dentists, people that set up their own, like you can set up your own business. You think that if you're in the B quadrant, but you're really in the S quadrant because you're self-employed and the more money you make, you just work harder. So you're still in that time for money concept. You're still exchanging time for money, you're just maybe making more dollars per hour, and no one is sharing the dollars per hour with you. You're making it for yourself. So there's more of it for you after you earn it versus what you would see in the employer concept where you're dictated to by salary. So significant issues in that quadrant, again, same thing. You're limited time for dollars. So you're putting a limitation on how much you can make. Those people typically don't get wealthy because the more they make, the more they spend. They're really caught up in the whole cycle of living the better life. I have to look good. I need to, I need to keep up with the Joneses, all the stuff that goes on, that because they're a lawyer or they're a professional and they went out and got the education, they're going to show it, and they have that concept of it. Okay, so that's our self-employed quadrant. Then we go into the business quadrant, which is creating leverage with the S&E people. In other words, you're going to use other people's time. You've figured it out that time is your only limited asset. Why am I going to allow my money that I make tied to time? So you start leveraging with S&E people. You surround yourself with great people. You have no fear of people being smarter or better than you. In fact, you go out and find them. You try to find the most competent people you can. You don't mind if they're 10 times smarter than you are, if they're more competent, more creative, more, all the better. You surround yourself with those people because the more you surround yourself with competent people, the less what? The less time you have a business. You can delegate. You believe in teams. You work to build the best possible team. There's no cap on your worth. Right? Because the more people you hire, the more successful you get. You hire more people, the more leverage you get. You're making money off of other people's time. And that's the incredible thing. Financial freedom builds other kind of freedoms. Serving people, that's huge. This quadrant is a big service of people quadrant. Self-confidence is big. That's what you need in order to surround yourself with qualified and top-notch people is a level of self-confidence so you don't feel small around them. People who feel small around people that are powerful are people that usually losing is a reason to win, so they choose to win, so they don't have this fear of losing. They can step into things, and if the business goes under, it doesn't matter. It's a concept of going back to Napoleon Hill's research about the most successful people in the world. And he did 25 years of research, and he wrote his book about, book that basically went through what are the characteristics of people who are successful. And the number one characteristic he found is that they believe they would succeed no matter what. They had this inherent belief that held them on course, perceived every day of that success. And I think people forget that. I think they truly do in network marketing. I think people get involved in network marketing, and the minute something happens, their uncle says no, their mother says you're in a scam or this is a pyramid scheme. They lose their own, but not these people don't lose that belief. They could get into businesses and they could crash three times. Kiyosaki was a classic. he went broke a couple times. In fact, in his book, he talks about, I wish I would have just gone millions of dollars in debt. I didn't walk away from my business blow-ups with nothing. I walked away from my business blow-ups with huge negative. Huge negative. So very costly. But, you know, it didn't stop him. It didn't deter him. He just said, hey, I know how to make income. I know that income is out there. It grows on trees. I'm going to go find it. It doesn't matter if something didn't go right. For some of you, you get up involved in Manatech, you find your first business builder, and 3 months later, that business builder, 6 months later, decides that this isn't for him, and he walks away, and you go, okay, well, maybe it's not for me either, and you quit. You get discouraged. You let discouragement. Think and grow rich, Napoleon Hill. Discouragement wasn't a factor in those people's decision-making. They looked at discouragement, at bad things that happen to them or negative things or failures as a road to their success. It's a step into their success. And that's the way we need to view it. But you see the value they put on failure, the value is it's a road to my success. The value of teams, the value of self-confidence, the value, you see all their core values there, very different shift. And then the investor quadrant is another whole level. That's your fourth one. Total leverage. Other people talked about that last week, but other people's money is where you go buy a piece of real estate for $20,000, you only put $5,000 down. You use $15,000 other people's money because 3 years from now when that's worth $60,000, if you would have used all your money, you only had had a 200% growth. Because you only used $5,000 of your money, you had this massive 800%, you know, or 1,200% growth. That's what you're looking for by using other people's money. Leverage off of other people's money. And that's truly freedom in all aspects. I mean, you're getting time freedom. Now, because how much time does it take to invest in real estate, invest in the stock market, and make the right decisions on all these areas where you can leverage off of, do it or not do it? There's no tie to you. There's no, you know, structure that ties you to the work. So you truly get more than financial freedom, you're getting total time freedom here too. And you can develop time freedom in the business world as well, in the B quadrant, because you're surrounding yourself with great people, and you can gradually move yourself out of that. So they use money as a means to change the world. Contribution is in a whole different way. And no longer is that contribution, I'm going to tithe every Sunday, but now it's contribution, I'm going to put $1 million in a foundation and start changing people's lives. I'm going to start building a foundation for families that can help restore families in a spiritual way. I'm going to, you know, put $500,000 into a project in Kenya to help, you know, build churches over there. I mean, it's, you see the change, using money as a totally difference in changing the world in a bigger way. They play games, they play a bigger game. Risk is king. Here's another core value. What's your concept of risk? Some people are so risk adverse, my husband, classic. I mean, I can't even tell him the things I do. If I told him the things I do, he'd just freak out. So we don't even talk about what I do with the money and how I invest and what I don't, you know, he has no clue with most of the things I do because he's risk adverse, and all it would do is disrupt his system. I don't need to make him nauseous over what I do because he has such an aversion to it. I have no aversion to it. I can put money in the market. I can buy a Century 21 franchise. I can buy real estate. I can go, you know, off in this direction. I can invest in people and their new businesses. I can do all of that stuff, which is exactly what I do. Why do I do it? Because I feel led to do that. I pray about it. I feel directed to do it. But there's no risk because the reality is I know that money is on trees. I can recreate it. If something misses tomorrow, it's not a bad. It's not a negative thing. I can recreate it the next day. It's just a matter of creativity, using your brain power and understanding the assets we have to create what we can create. So there's no risk aversion there. It's just feeling led, whatever to do, I do. Lord lays on me my heart to give somebody $200,000, I give them $200,000. We at the seminar we went through, they talked about always carrying a $100 bill in your pocket. I always carry a $100 bill in my pocket. Why? Because there's things that cash does that nothing else can do in certain times. If I need to create something at any given time, I have $100. I can make a win-win situation out of a win-lose situation at any time. But it was intriguing through this seminar when when the facilitator started asking people, how much money do you have? You know, probably 50% of the people in this seminar, 60 people in this seminar, 50% of them had less than $5 on their whole bodies, on their whole self. That's a value. That's a core value that exists in you. And something saying to you about, why do I carry only $5? Because I'm afraid of money. It's a money value. It's a money program running your life that's centered on some value that you've gotten from your parents or somewhere. And it's going to, what is it going to do? It's going to reproduce itself, you see? Well, investors in this quadrant, it's not. They can carry a $100 bill because there's no risk to losing it. Some of you won't carry a $100 bill because you're afraid you'd be so nervous walking around with it that it would just destroy you. Well, my suggestion is don't start with 100 then. Start with a 20. Start with a 50. But start pushing yourself out of your box because you're just creating. You're just reinforcing scarcity mentality. But that's kind of what's happening. The investor quadrant is people that risk is king. Risk is fine. There's no problem with risk because there's always more where that came from. If you don't believe there's always more where that came from, then what are you going to create for yourself? There's never going to be more because that's your belief. So you see the different values, different core values in these quadrants. How do you move from one quadrant to another? Let's talk about that because that's what you want to know. But hopefully this foundation helped you really see the quadrants and how they are, what they represent. Some of us are trying to do our Manatech business, but it's running afoul of our core values. You know, people get involved in Manatech and they can't do Manatech. And one of the main reasons they can't do Manatech is they're stuck in their original core value. Manatech is a business. It can fall either in S or B. Do you know that? I highlighted and expanded upon the business owner side of it because that's really what it should be. All network marketing should be in the B quadrant because it's about leveraging people. How do we convert it into an S quadrant? You guys understand that you can convert it into an S quadrant business. And a lot of you do that. Those of you doing that are the ones that are total enablers. In other words, you make yourself totally critical to every person in your organization. Now you're kind of tying yourself right back to the S quadrant instead of the B quadrant. You got to become an empowerer, and I'm going to suggest to you go. There's another talk I did, a training on Monday, May 2nd of 2005. It's on the ManaTrain website. It says, become a master asker, a habit to get to the right quadrant. It's a mechanism moving you from S to B, not allowing your Manatech business to be stuck in the S quadrant, because I'm helping you, support you to become a master asker so you get out of enabling and into empowering people, because that's what the B quadrant's about. But we get stuck we get stuck trying to do our Manatech business, but it's not consistent with our core values. So you got to start looking, what are our core values? What are the values that we have? And, you know, it's not about, there are a lot of questions about, you know, attorneys trying to make more money. Are you directed by money? Are you looking for that? Do you need to have the paycheck? Well, then you're not going to, if you need a paycheck every week or but every other week, you're not going to make it in Manatech because you're not going to get a paycheck. You got to value you. You got to have some self-confidence in what you can create. That's what creates the cash flow. Your determination and persistence and supporting other people. The commitment between committing to you and committing to others. So look at what that is about you. Where are your values? What is limiting your income? What values do we need to change? What do we just examine the four quadrants. What are some of the values out of the B and the I quadrant that you don't have today? So how do you need to shift to make that happen? So you start looking at those kind of things. What shift needs to take place by you to be part of that other one? The intriguing thing is that it's not a change in our, I'm not asking you to change your moral values, your religious values, or your social values. Kiyosaki made some great comments about that, and I want to talk to you about it because it's so true about what we get insaturated with. And he talked about, you know, changing from the left side of the quadrant, the E and the S, to the right side is easy for some people. Unfortunately, it wasn't easy for him. And he says he never would have made it if it wouldn't have been for his rich dad guiding him. Why was that true? Because he was here. Go back to how you were raised. Kiyosaki was born into a family of well-educated educators. In his family, a good education and a secure job or profession were very important core values. Got it? Of a good job. Core values. We've heard that over and over again. Right? And that used to be the preaching and teaching, and some of you are still doing it to your kids. Get a good education and a secure job. Well, what are you forcing your children to do? Stay stuck in the E quadrant. That's what you're doing. So you see that those core values are going to cause kids to be stuck in a quadrant that you may not want them to be on. From his mother's and dad's point of view, rich people were business owners and investors, and they were often considered greedy, evil, uncaring, and sometimes dishonest. Is that what you look at? It was unbelievable at this seminar this weekend when we asked people, what are poor people? The facilitator said, tell me what poor people are like. And you know what? The group, all she did was open the class up, and the class went on and on about what poor people are like, and they gave all sorts of different stats. You know, they're homeless, they're unhappy, they're non-contributing, they don't tithe, they settle for bones, but they're blessed, because this is a great group of incredible Christians. It was done with tons of members of my church. They're depressed, they're lazy, but they're blessed. And that's how they describe the poor. Then they said, okay, so describe to me rich. What does rich mean to you? Oh, rich people are greedy and conceited and don't care about others. They're insensitive, they're obnoxious, aloof, they're unhappy, they're motivated, but they're blessed. And it was so incredible to watch this group of people define rich people and poor people and exactly what they did. And all that did was reflect what? That we have a lot of core values in us that were given to us by our parents and by our Christian upbringing that qualified rich people a certain way and poor people another way. And I kept wondering, where do the people in this room see them? They couldn't see themselves in either rich or poor. So I guess no matter what quadrant you're near, and the other ones are, I mean, not quadrant, but what caliber, what they might, maybe they see themselves as, I'm middle of the road. The reality today is that we're losing the middle class. We have people in poverty zone, and then we have the wealthy, and we're really losing the middle class. So why are we putting these words associated with whether you have money or don't have money? But that's what people do, and I just saw it in a gigantic way this weekend, and that Kiyosaki grew up with it. So no matter what he was going to do, his parents only valued on him having a good job. Anyone live with that in their house? Their mom and dad looking at him doing network marketing, and that's not a real job? So as Kiyosaki went and climbed the ladder, I mean, didn't climb a corporate ladder. He climbed what? The business ladder. He broke away from the norm, and he went out and he invested in business, and he worked hard. He worked hard in his B&I side of the quadrants rather than the E&S. He still had the same social and moral conscience that his parents instilled in him, but they couldn't see it that way. They couldn't see it that way because to them, the big business people and investors were the dark side of life. So for Kiyosaki, as well as for many of us, changing quadrants is more than just a mental change because you're going to read it as rejecting your core value system, what your values are in terms of your religious values, your social values, your moral values, but it's not. All his parents could do when they looked at businessmen and worldly investing and making income off of other people's money and leverage, all that came to mind to them were pictures of a man who exploited the poor, the working class, and lost his religion. But those roots that they had given him were so deep that he took time to have to change that. And later, his dad realized that changing quadrants did not mean that he had to change his moral base or his religious values. But they were afraid of what it might cause him to change. Well, the reality is that the more money you make, you don't change. Just more of you shows up. Money doesn't make people bad. It just exemplifies whatever their true character is. That's why when you look out and you can see people who make money, if money made you bad, then why are they these incredible people in this world that have a lot of money that do great things? Because they didn't make them bad. It just allowed them to exemplify the characteristics they originally had. And people who get a lot of money and are bad people, I'm going to tell you their core value system was bad to start with. Money didn't change them. So anyway, so you have to understand where you are, and you have to understand that shift. To shift, Kiyosaki says we draft a five-year plan. It takes time and patience to get through the ups and downs of building a great business. And this is clearly true about network marketing. We can look at presidentials, and I see them all the time. Every time we have presidential meetings, there's presidentials there that skyrocketed here or something, you know, really fast. And where are they today? 20,000, 30,000 in volume. They lost it, and because they never developed, they never grew with the process. You want to grow with the process. One of the most important things we need to do to shift quadrants is to move into an environment that supports us. We need, and this is why I tell you, attending ManaQuest is so crucial. Attending ManaFest is so crucial. Because you go back into your environment. If I just listened to my husband all my life, I would still be self-employed, or I'd be in the E&S side. I never would have went to the B&I side because that was so contrary to my husband's beliefs and his values. So I had to shift away from that environment. That doesn't mean I need a divorce. It just means I had to surround myself that believed in what I believed in, that there was a better tomorrow. There was something better. There was a better way of quit being victim to the system and beating, in effect, some people call it beating the system. I call it building another system that works better, creating something that works better, that's going to give me true financial freedom and time freedom and allow me to do the kingdom work God's laid on my heart. So I went out there to do that in pursuit of it, but I surrounded myself. I went to every ManaFest, every ManaQuest. I went to all the regionals. I hung out with people that had similar beliefs that I had. And that helped catapult me. Set up a mastermind group. Get a We Can group together. That's why we love the We Can groups, because it's everybody who believes. They believe they can. It's a belief system. Shift out of I can't. I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy. Find people, surround yourself with people that will support you in being worthy and being good enough. Make investments in that. So it's incredible that environment is so important. Unlearning is also a process. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. That's a great quote out of his book as well, but I say thank goodness we're not dogs. We all can learn new tricks. We need to learn and move out of that cycle. Get out of the cycle of E and S. See, the E&S cycle to me is self-destructive, because you get into the E&S cycle and what happens is you pay the most taxes and, you know, you make more money, and what happens is that when you make more money, you get advice from your tax advisors, oh, man, you need more shelter from your taxes, so why don't you buy a bigger house? So people just, they put themselves into more debt, and the more debt you get, the number one reason, did you know this? Here's a good one for you. The number one reason people stay in the E quadrant is because of the debt they have. Isn't that a crazy concept? Oh, Mary Jo, but if I give up my job, how am I going to make my debt payments? I'm so saturated with debt that if I move out of the E quadrant, how am I going to pay my debt? Great, don't pay it. People look at me and go, oh my gosh, you're telling me not to, you know, commit. I made a commitment, a contract. I said, great. Go to the people you owe debt to and say, you know what, for the next 12 months, I can't pay you a dime. I'm going to go and create something better. But at the end of 12 months, I'm looking forward to paying you totally off in the next 12 months after. You get no payments for 12 months, and in the next 12 months, you're going to be totally paid off. What a difference would that make? Huge. Huge. See, we don't get creative. We don't use our mind. How do we tackle problems? That's another issue that came up in the seminar. It said, what if one of your best friends needed surgery and had no health insurance and needed $25,000 in the next 24 hours? You couldn't use your own cash, so I don't want to talk to you people who could write a $25,000 check, which are probably not most of you on this call, but we can't use your own cash. So come up with how are you going to raise $25,000 to help your friend get her surgery in 24 hours? And boy, that room went dead. And then all of a sudden people start thinking and ideas start popping. And my little brain just goes, you know, I think about it and it's like a challenge. It's like, oh, great, let me think of it. And it was like 101 ways. There's a billion mechanisms out there in creating cash. But if we don't give our head the freedom to do that, we're not going to create that. So it's us unlearning an old process. It's us staying out of stuckness and us getting training and understanding how we can create differences in our lives and not be tied to dollars, tied to taxes, tied to the debt we're in. How do we create something different? The insanity definition is exactly as you know it. If you keep doing what you've always been doing, you're going to keep getting the same thing. So you got to create something different. Next concept, all caterpillars make cocoons before they have butterflies. So the idea here is we need to experience the mistakes, and we already went through that, the concept of failing. I failed. I had two businesses that went under. Well, not really. One business was closed down and went under, and the other business I ended up liquidating because of NAFTA being passed. They put us out of business. When they broke down and the people across in Mexico could make the same sweaters I was making for one-third, or not really two-thirds the price, one-third less, the companies weren't going to buy them from me anymore. It made no sense. We annihilated the garment industry with NAFTA, annihilated it. When it disappeared, some people say that's good, some people say it's bad. I think when you lose a lot of jobs, if you don't have an adequate, place to put people, everybody said, well, the service industry will pick them up. Yeah, flipping burgers at McDonald's. Turns out it didn't work. Nice theory, didn't work. So we have this huge problem with disparity of wealth today because of things like NAFTA and whatever. So those things attacked us. So we have to look at creating something different. But you have to go through mistakes. You have to go through downsides to catapult you to upsides. And that's part of making shifts out of the quadrant. Learn that mistakes are just creating you a better person. So that's important. The next step is, if you want to make a shift into the quadrants B quadrant, you have to become a leader. You need to learn leadership skills. And that's why we invest in people in network marketing. In fact, Kiyosaki says that network marketing companies can create S or Bs. If you go into certain network marketing companies, if they don't focus on developing your skills, your leadership skills, if they don't focus on self-development, if they don't focus on power of purpose and doing clemmer work and going out there and working on you, if your network marketing company purely focuses on developing your sales skills, then you're never going to get out of the S quadrant. You're going to stay stuck there because all you're going to do is become a great seller and you're not going to develop into the leadership that you need in order to lead, guide, and direct an organization, a business, in the B quadrant. So make sure you understand it's not just about learning how to sell. It's about developing you. It's about building teams and learning how to work with each other, becoming inspiring and self-confident and all of that, critically important. Can you keep your values in E or S and still be successful? Absolutely. Some people ask that question. You can be an employee and still be successful. And I gave you two examples of that come right out of Kiyosaki's book. Both of them were firemen making $35,000 a year. That doesn't sound like it's going to get you too wealthy too fast. But the firemen, they took every one of their days off. One of them went out and started buying houses with a buddy. He borrowed some money from some people, bought a couple of houses, started fixing them up, and then renting them. And he kept doing it over and over and over again. And 20 years later, he owns 20 houses, and he's making $10,000 each month in additional income from each one of his houses. Notwithstanding the fact that if he ever decided to sell those houses, he's a multimillionaire. But he likes the cash flow he's making from and gets great appreciation, so he continues on his path the way he's doing it. But he went from a guy who's making $35,000 who barely could live, and how many people stay at that level and never do something with their free time? What are you doing with your free time today? People in the B and I quadrant, they don't just sit around and watch television. B and I quadrant people are creating something different and better for their life. They're not into immediate gratification. They're into what am I creating? The other fireman spent his time off doing what? Learning the stock market. And he became an incredible investor. And 20 years later, he had a $3 million portfolio. Now, if he just took that entire portfolio, liquidated it, and put it in a CD, he'd be making $300,000 a year. His retirement is done. He doesn't have to worry about a future. He created his financial future. But he was only earning $35,000 a year in his E job. He worked his E job, but he understood the B and I sectors, the quadrants, and he worked out of those quadrants as well. So don't feel like you're just because you're in the E quadrant that you're stuck there for life. Your choice. You can have a job and still work out of the B and I quadrant. It's kind of what we're talking about with the ICANN program when I say 6 to 10 hours a week. Work part-time at your networking business. 6 to 10 hours a week to create a financial future for yourself so you can eventually get out of that quadrant and have a financial security. And then the last thing on the outline is bad times. Look forward to the upcoming bad economic times. People in the B and I quadrant love bad economic times because it's opportunity. People in E and S quadrants, panic. during tough times. Gasoline prices going up to me are nothing. Why? Because it's just about extra dollars. It's not going to kill me. It's not going to make a difference because I can create more income. The belief system is there. People in fixed income are going, oh, my gosh, it's going to kill me. Choices. Make choices. Look at
Mary Jo, can I ask a quick question?
Sure. We're getting overtime. Sorry, you guys. I went a little long today, but hope you got something out of this. Yeah, go ahead.
You have a statement there, leaders interfere in other people's lives to help them to achieve things they otherwise would not. Is that a Kiyosaki quote?
And it actually comes from Clemmer work.
So I could put Brian Clemmer's name on that?
Yep.
Thank you.
You betcha. It's a great quote, isn't it? Don't you like it?
Oh, love it.
It's super.
What's the quote again?
It's on the outline, and it basically says this, that leaders interfere in other people's lives to help them to achieve things they otherwise would not.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's about you interfering. It's about you getting in people's faces. It's about you holding people accountable. It's about you stepping up and playing a bigger game. Quit being the enabler and start being the heat to the fire to create what they really want in life that they otherwise, without your interference in their life, they wouldn't have done. Make some
sense?
What
is the date that you did another training? I think you said May 2nd, 2006?
May 2nd, 2005. It was called Become a Master Asker. It talks very much about the concept of getting out of enabling into empowering.
Okay.
And how do you do that? Because that's a huge shift. That's a big shift that helps people move from one quadrant to the next. It'll help you take your network marketing business out of the S quadrant into the B quadrant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
But again, you got to build the business first. You got to become that leader, but in the process of becoming that leader, you've got to learn how to become an empowerer, not an enabler. Otherwise, you're just going to be building an S business, which is going to drive you crazy. Some people in network marketing go, oh, Mary Jo, I just babysit all the time. It robs me of it. Oh. Well, you know, the B and I quadrant are not people that have problem with time. They have all the time in the world because they haven't tied themselves down to something that just grinds them to death. Well, you can build a network marketing business that's going to grind you to death, or you can build one where you become very independent, and that's by empowering other people to the greatness that they are. That's the interference in people's lives. To get them to do things they wouldn't do on their own. Okay?
Makes sense. Great.
Okay, you guys, any questions? Any growth? Any reactions? Is this tough stuff?
I'm ready to change.
Oh, there you go. Amen.
I'm an enabler.
There you go. And you want to get out of that
one. And I'm worn out.
Well, who's doing it to you?
Me.
Good. Great awareness. Just take that little finger and go, that's me, Mary Jo. Look in the mirror. I'm enabling. Well, go look at that Monday, May 2nd, 2005 call and download that outline and work through that. And maybe that will help you on the right path to getting out of enabling. Okay? Great.
Yes.
And why do we enable? Why do we end up enabling?
Because I want to help everyone.
Two most important reasons that you enable. I'm going to suggest it's not because you want to help other people. I'm going to suggest it's because you have some inherent need to be needed by other people. Because if you really wanted to help other people, you'd want to make your business successful and make millions of dollars so you could help millions of people.
Right.
But by enabling and doing what you're doing, you're taking yourself out, you're keeping yourself busy by being needed. And that makes you feel good about yourself at some certain level because people need you.
Yes.
Does that make some sense to you?
Yes.
The other reason we become enablers is because we have a fear that if we don't do things, our business will disappear. So we're coming fear. We're coming
That's
from
me.
Fear. Mary Jo, if I don't call her every week about her monthly automatic order, then what if she stops ordering? And I go, so what? If the only calling her every week, how many orders are you going to ever be able to get in your business? How many calls you can make each week? Well, duh, are you ever going to make $1 million in Manatech? Never. Because you've put this restriction on. You've got to create in people's heads. You've got to create the value of the product. You have to give them the tools to create the value of the product so they're going to order no matter whether you call them every week or not. Now, I'm not telling you you don't need to service your customers, but services in ways that are not taking away your time. Like Mary Jo does what? I send out mana mails once a month. I have 200, 300 people that get mana mails in my organization that I'm in charge of, and then I have 12 or 15 of my other leaders that are sending out the mana mail as well. We're touching lives in a different way that doesn't take my time. It takes, you know, and then I allocate who's doing the mana mail. So I have 12 different people drafting a mana mail. So the only time it takes of me is dedicating to, of course, and I delegate, so it doesn't take any of my time. Lydia takes an hour to go over to Office Depot, plug in the mana mail, get it run off with the pre-printed addresses on all the forms. She staples them and puts stamps on them, and they're in the mail. It takes about an hour and a half once a month. And I've touched, you guys want to get on the phone with these people and spend hours on the phone because you think, oh, my, if I don't talk to them, they're not going to order. And ay. I create value through the mana mail. I introduce new values for them. Why is it valuable? Why do you need to keep taking these products? Da, 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 da. I send them little tokens of gifts at the end of the year, touch their lives, day timers. I sent out 150 day timers this year at the end of the year. That was after I did that little training on life referral of a lifetime. But that's what you want to do. Look at what you're doing and say, how can I be different? Because this isn't working. So how do I need to shift? Okay. Any other questions before we go? I know we're running way over. Woo! Anyone
Mary
else want to
Jo, you talked about Plus this morning, and I didn't get in on that. Could you tell me what they're doing with Plus?
Yeah. Well, there's an ingredient on the outside of Plus that they've been using for years called titanium dioxide that is a colorant that allows Plus to be a really white, and they're no longer going to use it. They're using a nutrition-based thing, and so your Plus capsules, the word is that they're now going to be a little different, like a gray color kind of instead of white. They're not going to be quite as pristine white. So, but I don't think they're coming out in the bottles right now. I don't know what the timing on that is. I just got an email that was written by Rick Deneff, who's a master herbalist. He's also a bronze presidential in Manatech, talking about the new Plus. And that was dated as of yesterday. So I'm not sure when the date is that shift is going to be made, but I do know it's forthcoming. Okay? But
Thanks. It's
good news. It's great news. I mean, that's what you want. But you're going to want to know about it so you can respond to people, get their bottle Plus, and it doesn't quite look the same. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You betcha. Okay, anyone else before we go? Okay, quadrant movers, let's go move quadrants. And then let's move this world in a new way.
The moderator has disconnected. The call will now end.